1, 2, 3, 4.
Song Salad
with Shannon and Scott.
Welcome to Song Salad with Shannon and Scott.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Scott.
And together,
we're down on the farm.
Ooh, are we?
Yeah. Come on down to our farm and we'll give you some fresh picked produce.
Produce.
This is a produce farm.
Oh, a produce farm, huh?
Yeah, we grow the finest in produce from your big to your small.
I thought you were a food farm.
Well, produce is food.
Great.
What do you eat?
How about some turkey? Did you forget I could do a good turkey impression?
I didn't even think about it. Can't say it crossed my mind. So you're down on a turkey farm.
On the turkey farm.
I'm farming some sweet taters
to
go with that turkey.
And some green beans.
Green beans?
Green beans. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
This week is American Thanksgiving on Thursday. So if you're not an American, then not happy Thanksgiving. But
whatever your equivalent is and whenever you celebrate it, have a happy one.
Yeah. Gonna eat a lot of food.
What are you thankful for?
Ooh, good question. Good question.
5 hours later.
I don't know why it's taking me so long. I'm thankful that I have my health.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for my friends and family. This is the most boring. I'm sorry. It's just you asked me like a real question and then my mind just went blank.
Let's take the reality out of it. What are you thankful for that's like a weird small thing that brings you joy that like you don't normally recognize as something you're thankful for?
I'm thankful that my work took my standing desk away.
You didn't want it? You didn't like it?
It was really hard to pull it up.
So in order to save your back and neck, you had to exert extra force onto your back and neck by pulling this desk up.
Yeah, like I had to like spread my arms as wide as they would go because the desk is wide and then try to leverage non-existent muscles to pull it upward.
That's a bad design. Yeah, they should get like some hydraulics in there to help you out.
I know. I like tweaked my neck doing it and I was like, this can't happen.
So it's gone now.
It's gone now.
Well, let's all be thankful for that.
Yes. Thank you, work, for taking away my standing desk and not making me feel bad. What are you thankful for, Boo?
I am thankful that I get to see my niece over Thanksgiving.
Aww.
She's cute.
She is cute.
She's about 8.5 months old and just a cuddly little thing.
She's a little butterball.
Yes, a little butterball turkey.
She's so cute.
So I'm excited.
You know what else you can eat on Thanksgiving? A salad! You can eat salad on Thanksgiving like a song salad. What is it?
It's a song salad is a short song that we create using a random genre of music and a random article from Wikipedia as a topic.
And we do that. That's not how I wanted to start that sentence.
And we do that,
period. And we get our topic and genre by spinning the salad spinner, which is a noise or impression or a sound effect or improvisational prompt that comes from you, our loyal vegetarians.
We've got such a long list of salad spinners now. This is great.
Do we have, like, if you look at the rows on our spreadsheet, do we have a year's worth of salad spinners? Do we have 52 salad spinners?
Yes.
Guys, we have
63.
We have a full year's worth of salad spinner suggestions.
We have 63.
But we randomize our list, just like we randomize everything in our lives. So you never know when yours is going to come up.
Yep. I randomize everything in my life, like how much money I have in my bank account at any given time.
How do you think I ended up with the husband I have?
Exactly.
I just did a little Tinder spin and I picked one. It's like, you'll do.
This week's salad spinner comes from JD.
Chip.
Chip says, your cat's first thoughts when you get home.
This is cute.
And this applies to both of us because we have different cats.
We do have different cats.
Random cats.
We, in fact, do not co-own the same cats.
And I guess you did kind of randomize your cats.
I did, because they just were whichever ones I caught in a trap outside my college apartment.
Well, I mean, because they were homeless, you didn't just, like, steal people's cats in a trap.
No. There was a feral colony outside my college apartment.
And mine were sort of random.
I mean,
I picked one out of a group of cats at a cat cafe, and then one was from a foster home. So, you know,
that's about as intentional as you can get with cats.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what are your cat's first thoughts when you get home, Shannon?
Here we go. Hide the weapons.
Spin. No explanation
needed. They're very antisocial. Do you know the song that goes, the returned innocence?
Yes. Yeah, I believe it's called The Return to Innocence.
So what you're saying is I could have just said, do you know the song The Return to Innocence?
Yes, I do. Okay. I recognize it after like the second note that you sang, but I just let you keep going.
Cool. Great. Is that world beat?
I guess it counts because it's a fusion of pop or rock genres with world or traditional music. And that's probably like a traditional, quote unquote, either, what is it, Native American chant or Celtic chant? I have no
idea. Guys, we spun world beat.
Should we just start with that?
Yeah, sure.
World beat. This is music that blends pop or rock music with world music or traditional music.
You know where I heard that song?
The infomercial for Pure Moods.
You got it, boo. You got it. And the one right after that was Sail Away by Enya.
Sail Away. Did we play audio from that infomercial on our Enya episode?
We must have.
I think we did.
Because we've definitely talked about the Pure Moods.
Pure Moods.
The Pure Moods infomercial before on this show.
Yeah.
It was like the soundtrack of my after school life.
Yes, exactly.
Because it was always when I got home from school and was like watching Oprah or something.
Right. Advertising to middle-aged stay-at-home moms and Shannon.
And me. And it worked because it stuck in my head forever.
Well, let's talk more about what makes a world beat song a world beat song.
Okay.
It is a cross-pollination of contemporary and roots genres, and it suggests a rhythmic, harmonic, or textural contrast between its modern and its ethnic elements. So one thing that I quickly mentioned to Shannon when we first spun this is like, oh, remember how Paul Simon performed like pop music with an all like African music ensemble? That's world beat, basically. So you can kind of use whatever quote-unquote world music genre you want, and I guess in our case, that means anything outside the United States.
Yeah. So is this just like appropriation the genre?
Or appreciation the
genre? I guess so. There's a fine line, let's be real.
I mean, I would say it's more fusion and hybrid rather than actually appropriating fully. I don't think the goal is to recreate any style of world music. I think it's to incorporate elements into your own style. So.
Cool. Okay. So the thing about this that is confusing to me is like, can you be let's say Korean pop artist and by incorporating like blues rhythms, are you making world music?
I would say, yeah.
Oh.
Because it's a fusion of two different like site-specific genres of music, right?
Okay, so tell me this.
Yeah.
Should we be looking to kind of like recreate that sound, or should we like pick another culture's like traditional music and just like go for a mashup?
I think option B.
Yeah.
So whatever topic we get, we'll see where in the world it takes us and combine that place's like traditional or evocative musical style with just a, let's say a generic pop rock song from our brains.
Cool.
Yeah.
This is going to be interesting.
So Wikipedia says, as an ethnically colored genre, world beat is a part of the world music movement that is steadily influencing popular music in every corner of the globe. This is partially due to the advance of digital music production and the availability of high-quality ethnic music samples to artists and producers in the recording arts. The globalization of texture and style between indigenous and modern genres has rapidly expanded the scope of 21st century popular music and continues to reshape how the world defines the increasing number of genres conceived with world music elements. Now, samples, as we've talked about before, are basically what I use to create every single song salad song.
Yeah.
So whenever we've done any kind of world music genre, you know, say we're in India or say we're doing Celtic music. Yeah, soca.
Yeah.
All of those sounds of like the tabla drums and the steel drums and things are all samples that I use. And today, in 2018, I can just get them on the internet. But in, I think, like probably the, like, 1960s, 70s, when world beat first entered the scene, it was musicians actually traveling to these places. For instance, the Beatles going to India, working with sitar players and actually getting them to record for their albums. And that was the first exposure that these pop rock audiences had to these world music instruments and styles.
Cool. So they were sort of doing like anthropological research in a way.
Yeah. Or ethnomusicology is the study of world music.
Yes, yes, yes. Cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to be armchair ethnomusicologists today.
We are.
And hopefully we spin a topic that has any kind of outside the US connection so that we can make a little fusion genre.
Hopefully. Or we'll just choose one, I guess. Or choose a genre.
We'll
choose a country.
Yeah, we can stretch it.
Yeah, we always do.
Yeah, we're pretty good at that.
Well, first we need some examples, maybe.
We do.
Do you want to go with a Indian influenced Beatles song?
Let's do an Indian influenced Beatles song, and then maybe what was the most famous Paul Simon song from that era where he was like doing like African beats and like lots of like drums like that.
Under African Skies by Paul Simon. And then let's play for the Beatles, Within You, Without You.
Joseph's face was black as night. The pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked his days under Africa's skies. This is the story of how we begin to remember.
Yes. Say it again.
I was just doing that to make fun of you.
I know. I would just like it to be known.
Yes.
That I looked up the most popular world beat tracks, and on a website called Last.fm, Return to Innocence was number one.
You nailed it out of the gate.
I did. I saw world beat and I just knew.
You just knew.
I just knew. Did you read the part in the Wikipedia article about world beat that said there are some classic world music subgenres are Irish folk gamelan music or mm-hmm. calypso. And gamelan is that instrument from Indonesia.
Correct.
We've used it before in songs?
We have, occasionally. Not often, but it's like a sort of metallic percussion,
yeah.
pitched percussion collection of instruments.
So. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are just like, I mean, calypso, I feel like people are pretty familiar with. We also have done a calypso song before.
Mm-hmm.
What you gonna do when the pancakes come?
Yes.
That's the episode title if you want to hear our calypso song. We've never done just like gamelan music.
Because it's traditionally instrumental.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have done Irish folk music. Yeah.
Yeah. And combining it with pop rock, that's where we get into things like Enya.
Enya.
And
we did
those boys.
Yeah. The stirring boys.
The stirring boys.
Oh, it was our.
The strapping lads.
Yeah. It was our song about the makeup company.
Yes. Lashes for Lasses.
Yes. That one too.
All right, well, let's get a topic and see where in the world it takes us.
Where in the world where Shannon and Scott go with the genre?
Oh, yeah. That was Rockapella beatboxing.
What was it?
Yep.
Or was it you getting run over by a steamroller? All right, so you need to make the sound of your cat's first thoughts. When you come home, thank you, Chip.
Okay. The food bringer!
Spin. What is this? It sounds awesome.
Treasury of Archaic Names.
A treasury of archaic names.
What is it, Shannon?
It is a role-playing game.
Supplement.
Supplement. Sorry. I got so excited. I didn't finish the sentence. Published by Judges Guild.
In 1978.
Guys, it is a collection of name lists keyed to percentile dice numbers so the game master can roll dice to generate random names.
Okay, so Shannon's our local dungeon master of this podcast.
Yeah.
So what is a percentile dice?
Okay, a percentile dice is also sometimes referred to as a D100.
Wow.
And it is a dice with a bunch of different facets on it, and they will say like 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, like they have like big numbers on them.
Yeah.
And when you roll them, usually a list like this, either for like items or locations or effects, or in this case names,
mm-hmm.
Will be like listed next to those numbers. So when you roll the dice and it comes up as like a 20 or something,
yeah,
you can look on the list and go down to like what's next to 20, and then that name or effect or item is what you can use.
Cool.
It's a way of feeling like the game master or dungeon master, depending on which role-playing game you're playing, isn't just railroading their players or isn't like overly controlling, because the game master can say like, I'm rolling dice too. So it's not just about what I want. It just adds another element of randomness.
Wow.
To the game.
How appropriate for us.
I know.
Cool.
If you've never played a role-playing game before, something like Dungeons and Dragons, a game master or dungeon master will come up with a story, and then a group of players will play through the story and choose different actions to take, much of which are decided by the outcome of rolling dice. So like if you want to jump over a moat, you roll your dice and you add different characteristics that are unique to your character to see if you can make it over the moat.
Cool.
Things like that.
So in conjunction with the percentile dice, would you probably use like a D10 or something to get like more granular numbers?
Yeah, sorry about that. So yeah, you would generally, I think.
That would make sense, right?
Yeah, I haven't played very much with percentile dice. They're kind of like a unnecessary thing. Like
for D&D, we don't use them much.
But yeah, like you could roll a percentile dice and a D10.
Right.
And so you could be like, okay, I got a 53.
Yeah, because I'm sure this treasury of names probably has like 100 names in it, right?
More than that, I'm sure.
Well, how would you go more than 100 with the percentile dice? Roll it multiple times for like 100 and
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, there might be different like kinds of names. Like it might be like elf names and gnome names.
And they all have numbers.
Is what I'm thinking. So you could be like, okay, I need to name this drow elf that they just met.
Yeah.
So I'm going to turn to the drow elf names page and I'm going to roll my D100 and D10.
Can you imagine being in the room? Well, I guess it's one person that wrote this whole book, but I was going to say like brainstorming on like what names should we use for these different creatures?
How good is your job if you just get to sit around all day and be like, what names sound like elf names?
Bill Owen was the person who has that had that job. Bill Owen,
you lucky bastard.
I love this.
But like, if you think about it, in at least in American pop culture, I guess maybe at this point, Western pop culture, like Western European pop culture, there are names in fantasy worlds that signal different types of fantasy creatures.
I guess so.
Like if you think about all the elf names in like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
If you think about all the like dwarf names in Lord of the Rings and like other comparable, I'm only thinking of Lord of the Rings right now, but in like other comparable fantasy series.
Or like various creatures in Harry Potter.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like elves always have to do with like nature or trees. and dwarves always have to do with like mining or rocks or like, so there is a kind of cultural significance to the names that I think like people pick up on. And
interesting.
And Dungeons and Dragons is very good at the publisher, Wizards of the Coast, and the very many authors that have existed over the years are very good at maintaining a kind of consistent through line so that, for example, the drow elf names, which are the like dark or evil elves, all kind of have names that have a lot of Z's in them. Hmm. And they also use parentheses. So things will be like, words will be, not parentheses, sorry, apostrophes. So words will be chopped up like Zizium Doe Earth, and like Doe apostrophe Earth is like a thing. So that they like make up.
Zizium Doe Earth.
I don't know. They like make up a convention the way that we do with languages now. Like you can hear a name and be like, oh, that sounds like an Italian name, or oh, that sounds like a Korean name.
Yeah. Zazu do bird.
Watch out, next time we play D&D there's gonna be a drow elf named Zazu do bird.
or Zazzle Donline Company.
Zazzle e-retailer.
That's yes, exactly. Great elf names.
Yeah. Okay. So
let's try to find this book online. I want a PDF.
Yes.
I want to know what some of these names are. And I honestly want to get our dice.
Yeah.
Roll to pick a name and build a whole song on a name.
Yeah.
And like where in the world we think that name came from. Here's a description of the book. This tome provides tables for random generation of olden names, nicknames, titles, town, and tavern names for fantasy and science fiction role-playing games. The English language and its antecedents such as Celtic, Teutonic, Scandinavian, Latin, and Greek tongues have been used as sources so that name meanings would be on the fringes of the familiar and exotic simultaneously. So I think maybe we should keep our music in those realms, Celtic, Scandinavian, Latin, Greek.
Sure.
A good name will establish a character's personality or an inn's or village's atmosphere and history. It encourages a credible rapport and reminds players that all of the characters have a strong self-interest and identity in the game. 46 pages of various tables are provided with an extensive guideline to their application. The various tables provide 320,000 possible name combinations.
Wow.
And I found, here's a page, for example, a description of the section in the book including female first names.
Okay.
It says, for the following list of female first names, Teutonic, Celtic, Germanic, and Irish have been used. Since most of these are of foreign origin, the names' meanings are not often evident. Anglo-Saxon names for women come in about 9 different types.
Ooh.
Deity or religious names, flower names, attributes or character names, names of jewels, names of months, nicknames or diminutives, masculine pet names, and foreign derivatives and invented names, such as Shakespeare's fat woman called Dowsabel and the medieval invention Dulcibella. Mm. Other languages seem to use similar types, et cetera, et cetera. Then it has information on how to roll, but it doesn't actually have a list of the names, sadly.
How do you roll?
A random female name can be determined by rolling 1d100 and consulting the master subtable list to see which subtable to roll under. Another 1d100 roll will determine the actual name from the subtable listing.
I see.
Maybe the main tables are like deity or religious names, flower names, et cetera, and then there's subnames within those.
Yeah.
Crazy. And that's just first names.
Wow. Wow.
I want this book.
I know. I'm sorry we can't get it.
Me too. But do we think that's enough of a guide?
No.
We got something.
Okay. We found an eBay listing that very helpfully has one page of the book.
Male first names. It's 2 pages, actually.
Yeah, sure.
And whoever had owns this copy highlighted a bunch of them.
Yeah. Like, they must have used a lot.
Maybe they highlighted them when they were used. So they didn't want to duplicate themselves.
I guess, but like if you think about how many people do you know named Matt? You know? Like there had to be one name.
What's the like Elven Matt though? Is it like Cleghorn? Is everyone named Cleghorn? Yeah, which Cleghorn are you talking about?
Yeah, Cleghorn G or Cleghorn H?
I hate Cleghorn H.
I like Foghorn Cleghorn. I saith.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Well, the interesting thing about this is that this list is numbered from 200 to 600 here. It's pages 10 and 11 of the book, it looks like. So we have 400 names to choose from, but how do we roll the dice to get these high numbers?
You must have to roll like a D100 and then like 2 D10s or something.
So the first two numbers are, or the first number is determined by the...
Yeah.
Gotcha. You want to do it that way?
Yeah, let's do it that way.
All right. So we'll roll a D6.
Okay.
And then 2 D10s and see what happens.
Okay. Okay, so are we going to roll and find out what the subject of our song is going to be called?
Yes.
Okay. Oh my God.
I hope we get Cleghorn.
I don't know what I hope for.
You want to roll the D6?
Sure.
All right. This will determine our first number. As long as it's not 1.
4!
4! We're in the 400s.
We're in the 400s, everybody.
All right. I'm going to roll the first next digit for the D10.
The first next digit, yes. Clear.
0.
4-0.
Shannon, do the honors for the last digit.
2.
402.
Elwith?
Elswith?
Elswith.
Elswith.
Elswyth.
Elswith. We're writing a song about you.
Elswith? Great.
Elswife?
Elswife?
Elswith.
I think with, because there's no E at the end.
Yeah.
Not that I know the conventions of spelling for whatever this is. So Elswith, should we give him a last name just from the same table?
Sure.
Let's give him a last name.
D6. Nope.
3 crit fails in a row. There
5.
You go. 5. 3.
6. 5-3-6 is Hakon. H-A-A-K-O-N?
Elswith Hakon.
Elswith Hakon.
Okay, Elswith Hakon.
Hakon. Should we make him like, I don't know, like some sort of Scandinavian?
Yeah.
And that's where our world element will come from?
Yeah.
All right. A Scandinavian elf named Elswith Hakon.
I don't know what I'm going to do for lyrics.
I'm going to start putting together some Scandinavian music.
Okay, let's do it.
Bye.
Bye.
I think we're going to make this work.
I think so, too. I think we really twisted ourselves in knots figuring out how to do this.
We did.
We got a little too excited.
So what are we doing with good old Liam Hemsworth here? What's his name?
Ellsworth Hakon.
Ellsworth Hakon. Haken?
Haken?
What did we say? It's H-A-A, right?
Yeah. Hakon. Let's do Hakon.
Ellsworth Hakon.
Because for my rhyme scheme.
Rhyme with bacon?
Yeah. No.
Hakon.
The lyrics are done. You cannot rhyme it with bacon at the moment. Hate to tell you.
Well, I call it bacon. It's the opposite of British Bake Off.
British Bake On. So we did a little bit more listening.
Yes.
And we found a Scandinavian instrument called the nickel harpa.
Nickel harpa. It looks like if you turned a violin on its side and added a bunch of girth to its neck.
It's got a thick neck.
And a bunch of more strings. And then like, not like piano keys, but like little like tabs that you press, basically.
It looks like it has a bunch of teeth coming out its girthy neck.
Yes.
And you play the teeth and you bow it. It's a crazy looking instrument.
You press all the buttons and you bow it across the normal part where you'd bow it.
We'll put a
picture of it as this episode's Twitter pic.
It's beautiful sounding.
Here's an example of a woman playing a traditional Swedish folk song on the nickel harpa. Beautiful, right?
Yeah, super. It's very haunting and ethereal, and I don't know. It gives me a little like chills.
Inspired by seasonal depressive disorder because of Sweden.
Yeah, I'm like, I dig this.
So we're gonna make a rock song.
Yeah,
using electric bass, electric guitar. Heavy hitting drums, along with some nickel harpa and some wooden flute, too.
Yeah. So I found that the lyrics of Scandinavian or Nordic folk songs often have to deal with nature or the like Nordic mythology.
Okay.
And so I kind of used that as inspiration for, okay, so what if Ellsworth Hakon was like a mythical figure.
Ooh, he's like lauded.
Yeah. So he's like, if there were a folk song about this mythical person, what would that folk song be?
The Battle of Ellsworth. And by battle, I mean the Ballad of Ellsworth.
There you go. Okay. And then I wanted to make sure that we incorporated the treasury of archaic names in a more direct way than just giving
that was nice of you
this person a name from the treasury. So I made like my own little folklore about
cool.
it. You want to hear it?
Tell me.
Okay, here we go. It goes verse, chorus, verse, chorus. Ellsworth Hakon had a book from beyond of every possible name. Guardian was he of this vast treasury, a tome that the ancients had made. And then the chorus, send up the names to the celebrant sky, honor each creature in speech, ordain them all with a thing to recall their bodies and souls from the breach.
Wow.
Second verse, nameless and dumb they trekked from beyond for Ellsworth to give out each one. For days he ordained everything with a name, then the keeper of names was done.
Hey.
And then we go back to the chorus. So basically, he's
putting
like him
Johnny Appleseeding names around.
Yeah, exactly. So like, or like Adam in the Bible, you know,
right,
like,
right.
all of the animals and people came to him, and he gave them all names.
Cool.
From the treasury of archaic names.
I like it.
Yeah, so he's the namer.
Who gave him his own name? Himself?
That's the mystery.
Ooh.
Yeah, you know?
Chills.
Could God make a mountain so big even he couldn't move it? Could the namer... Who named the namer? Who watches the watchers?
Exactly.
You know?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, nobody knows.
All right.
So that's my little idea.
That's so, I don't know, like epic and folkloric.
Thank you. That was my goal. Do you have more to say about your music?
Not really. I guess the only other thing would be that I am using traditional, you know, Western chord structures underneath this nickel harpa melody. And that is part of the fusion of the genres. So you'll hear, you know, if you took the nickel harpa and the flute out, it would probably just sound like a rock song and have no world beat influence at all. But with the addition of those two instruments, it changes the whole sound.
Is the woman... The example that you played, was that the woman Maiker?
Yes.
So if you want to find more of her on YouTube, because she does some like really cool videos just like out in the beautiful wilderness, her name is spelled M-Y-R-K-U-R, Maiker Oxymorder.
Yeah.
Cool.
What is our title?
The Keeper of Names?
Yeah, I think so.
Keeper of Names.
Could be an alternate title to the book.
True.
Well, here is The Keeper of Names.
A world beat song.
About the treasury of archaic names. A book. It's a book.
By Shannon and Scott.
With Pekong had a book from beyond of every possible name. Guardian was he of this vast treasury, a tome that the ancients had made. Send up the names to the celebrant sky, honor each creature in speech, ordain them all call their bodies and souls from the breach. Nameless and dumb, they trekked from beyond for Elswith to give out each one. For days he ordained everything with a name. Then the Keeper of Names was done. Send up the names to the celebrant sky, honor each creature in speech, ordain them all with a word to recall their bodies and souls from the
It's a hit.
A palpable hit.
A palpable hit. That should be like someone's pop single. That'd be funny.
A palpable hit.
Yeah. Like by Bruno Mars.
What a sweet song.
I like it.
I really like it.
It's folky, but it's rocky. And yeah, it's like evocative of Swedish folk music, but not like appropriating, I don't think.
I mean, I don't know. It feels fusion-y.
Yeah, it feels fusion-y.
It feels world beady.
It feels like it could be on Pure Moods.
What is the word that that guy is saying?
It's the longest note. It's like, when is he going to breathe?
Never. When he's dead.
Well,
that's not how that works. No.
We went a lot of places this episode.
We did. I'm sorry it was a little unfocused, everybody.
Well, maybe after editing it, it won't feel unfocused.
Oh, good.
We'll see.
Can you fix it?
I'll fix it all.
Thank you.
If anyone has this book, let us know.
Yeah.
It's cool. If anyone likes to play D&D and other role-playing games, let us know, too, because we're with you, fam.
Yeah, we're a big nerdy fam.
We just don't have time to ever play it.
I know.
Ever.
It's so sad. We got to tell you about stuff.
Okay. Go for it.
We're performing live.
We are.
When? On December 15th.
Great. Where?
At QED Astoria.
With whom?
With Rob Paravonian of the Odd Rock Comedy Hour.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing we did last time when we performed live, which is getting our suggestions for topic and genre from the audience. And then we'll run downstairs to the podcasting studio that's in the basement of QED. And we will come back up at the end of the show and we will perform the song live for the first time in front of all of you.
And while we're downstairs writing, you'll, if you're in the audience, get to see a lot of other great comedy music acts.
Yeah, including Rob, who is wonderful, who was on our, he was a guest on our show. The episode was called Life on the Ground.
Yeah, our trip hop episode.
And it was about three-toed snake-tooth skinks.
Yep.
Which is like, what a blessing that topic was,
what
really.
What a blessing.
Yeah, so come see us. We would love to see you. We will be going afterward to like a nearby bar or something so we can chat with all y'all.
And if you can't make it in person, you can still interact with us on social media. You can tweet at us at Song Salad Cast. You can join the Facebook group called the Produce Section.
Yeah, please do. We love having new people in the Produce Section.
Yeah. And you can also email us at songsaladpodcast@gmail.com. That's a good place to send any salad spinner suggestions you want or just like pictures of puppies and things.
Yeah. If you're a $10 and up Patreon donor, you can submit a topic and genre every month to go into the salad bowl. And once a month, we draw from the salad bowl for our topic or genre. And then we get a randomized missing half of that.
It's like Annie's locket.
What?
You know, a little orphan Annie, she had a locket and she had half of it and her parents had the other half.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Anyway. Until next week.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Scott.
And together, we're...
The return to innocence. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Is he saying Hawaii? No. Hawaii.
The return to Hawaii.